Welcome to the Cosmetic Courses podcast. In today's episode, Adrian Richards and Ron Myers discuss the business strategies within the cosmetic industry.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know whether that's something you lot are going to do. I assume you do liposuction, don't you?
Well, I don't. We, as you know, we have a number of plastic surgeons in our group. So the things I do now, whereas I used to do eyelids and liposuction and body lifts and all that sort of thing, now we've got people in the group who probably, been specifically trained in things.
So they focus more on that, yeah.
Yeah, they're probably better than me at doing things. So what I do is, I'm focusing on a few things, which hopefully I'm getting better at. So I think that's the way it's going. You know, people are tending to focus on, certainly on surgeons, things that they like doing, they feel they're good at, and they can get all the extra training. So,
well, which is great as well. Yeah. And I think that's an interesting trend.
Yeah.
When you do get some surgeons that will say they do absolutely everything.
Yeah. Not only cosmetic surgery. I mean, you get surgeons who do skin cancer, hand surgery, breast reconstruction, burns, and cosmetic surgery, and do one facelift a year. So I think people are moving away from that sort of trend.
And that is interesting in terms of looking at, how it would be really interesting to look at how that kind of sensitive database could be pulled together of looking at those people that really are, I'd say, the real specialists in those areas, wouldn't it? Because I think it is very mixed. And when you look at, as you say, when you look at how a lot of clinics or businesses market themselves, they market that they do this and this surgeon does it or whatever, but you don't know whether they do, it's their real area of expertise or specialty.
Yeah. And with all the money involved, it's difficult for people to turn things down. You're running a clinic, you've got expenses, someone says, I want a facelift, you haven't done one for 6 months, but it's £5,000 or whatever to you.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a dilemma between what you should morally do and money-wise. And, I mean, I have always tried to sort of do the moral right thing, even if it costs you money. So I think that's probably the way to go.
Well, I think long term in the medical marketplace, I think that's a very wise strategy, because it is those areas where, if you have any person can have a problem, however skilled they are with this, and where it would be that one that you haven't done for a while, and that's the last thing you want to face if somebody's coming from a medical indemnity perspective with a lawyer behind them.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And if they sort of say, how many of these have you done?
Yeah.
It's difficult to justify things if you haven't done very many. So it's interesting. There's two nurses, I've forgotten their names, who specialise in dermal fillers, isn't there? Maria Hackett, or is that, sorry?
In London.
Yeah.
Yes. And they don't do toxins, which is interesting.
No.
I never have done. I know what you mean. I can see them, but I can't think of them. So they've been there for a long while.
Yeah, so they are experts at dermal fillers, and all they do is dermal fillers. They've never,
absolutely.
They don't do hair removal, they don't do sclerotherapy, they don't do Botox, they just, stick to that. And Conrad de Boul, who is a very well-known dermatologist, I think he is, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
And lectures all over the world. All he does is Botox and fillers. He's booked out for the next 6 months. You can't see him for the next 6 months, but he doesn't do anything else.
And, I think that is really interesting as well. And I think there is an element of that, we've looked at from a business perspective as well over the last couple of years, because the one thing that, and especially when you're putting together this medical aesthetic clinic concept, is there are a gazillion things you can get involved with really nowadays that do potentially fit into the concept. But then you end up with another thing that you've got to market and promote in order to make it worthwhile, the underlying cost, especially if it's a piece of equipment you bought, and then the training behind it in order to make sure that you're going to deliver acceptable treatments. And you can end up with your marketing budget being very, very thinly spread across lots of different things that you're trying to promote to different people. And I think there is certainly an argument there for looking at really being laser targeted and focused and saying, well, look, and this is what I really enjoy doing, this is what I'm really good at, and so let's focus all my effort in terms of building my profile and all my marketing budget revolving around bringing in the people that are looking for that. I think there isn't a right or a wrong to that, but I think some people do lose sight of what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
and end up not necessarily making any more money than they would have done if they'd have stayed on a very specialised sort of platform.
Yeah, so I was talking to, I think you'll know who I'm talking about, but I won't say any names. There's this well-known businessman who worked for a transport company who was brought into a chain of clinics, which I'm sure you know immediately who I'm talking about.
Yes.
And he came in, basically, and looked at it from a business point of view and immediately said to the doctors, you're doing too many treatments.
Yes.
And the doctor said, what do you mean we're doing too many treatments? We do this and we do that. We do laser hair removal. We do Botox. We do fillers. We do surgery. And they all make us money. And he said, he analysed it all, says basically they don't. And the fact that you're spending time and effort on these low margin things is taking your focus away from the things that you are doing well and are making you more margin. And that is it Pareto's law, Ron?
Yes, 80-20.
Yeah. So just, could you just, so as I understand it, they say 80% of your income comes from 20% of your patients or treatment.
Right.
And 20% of your income comes from the patients and the treatments that give you 80% of your hassle.
Yes, I would potentially agree with that. I think, do you know what, I think it is really useful to do, and this is something that we've been doing over the last couple of years as well, is being absolutely laser-focused in terms of the pots of money that are coming into your business and trying to attribute them to the expense involved in that. So in other words, each individual treatment that you do has a separate margin.
Yeah.
Breast implants clearly would, because you've got the costs involved in the implant. You've also got the time involved in terms of you know the operating theatre.
Yeah.
Then you've got the marketing costs, any support, the number of visits that you have to have. You know, all of those sorts of things. That if you can attribute them and pull them all together and say, you know, all of those are expenses, and then that's the income that I get from that procedure. Then the margin is basically what's left.
Yep.
And each individual treatment that you do will have a different margin. And I think sometimes if you're really laser-focused and can pull together a spreadsheet that'll go, okay, I get my income from, you know, that's my income from breast implants, that's my income from toxins, fillers, hair removal or whatever, but that's the direct costs attributed to that.
Yeah.
You sometimes then come out with some interesting answers.
And should you focus on those, the things that give you the top results?
Well, I think the thing is, especially if you can wrap up the marketing costs that you might have attributed directly into that as well, then suddenly you start to look and go, sometimes there's some loss-making things in your business.
Yeah.
And that may then make you look and go, actually, should we really be offering or doing that and just scrubbing that out?
Yeah.
And if you scrub it out, then suddenly then that helps you then to focus on getting better at the other things that you do.
Yeah.
And I think there is this kind of tendency for people to think, well, if that clinic's bought that piece of kit and got into the body contouring market, you know, whatever. And I was having a discussion with a dentist, funny enough, the other week, who was talking about a cryolipolysis.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rep had come to see them and they'd said somebody in London had bought this and how much money they were making or whatever, you know. And it was totally different from her main focus, which is really the face for her as a dentist. But, you know, 70-odd grand investment in that piece of kit. You've got to be pretty damn sure that you're going to be making the money out of that.
It's because you feel you're missing out. You don't want to miss out on the next big thing or whatever.
Well, that's it. And the problem is as well, I think, you know, more often than not, you find that you know, the people, I mean, you know, you go to the meetings and I think you have to take away with a pinch of salt the business side of things. I think what you've got to do at the meetings is try to look at the scientific concept behind it and whether that's robust or not. So whether the thing really works, in how many people, the failure rate, the problems, etc. I think the business side of things is a lot harder to elucidate because partly that comes down to your model and the area that you're in as well. And I think, you know, what we've learned as well, I think, over the years is what will work in London opposite Harrods ain't necessarily going to work in Bolton opposite a chip shop. You know what I mean?
What does work in Bolton opposite a chip shop, Ron?
I haven't got a clue. Possibly something to do with weight loss.
Sounds like.
But you know, I think it all of these things are very interesting, and I think there aren't necessarily any sort of right or wrong answers. But I think you continually got to be asking yourself those sorts of questions, and especially you know what you've said as well probably is also what you enjoy doing, what you want to get good at, and I agree with you. I don't think you can get good at everything.
So what I've done, Ron, you might be interested in this, I've analysed per hour what are the most cost-effective treatments for me. Yeah. So
perfect.
So for instance, I do a lot of breast surgery, I do a lot of facelift surgery. So breast uplifts and implants are complicated operations. They take quite a long time. There's quite a high revision rate. Yeah. And you need to see the patients a lot. So, you know, for a plastic surgeon, you know, you're seeing half your time spent seeing patients in clinic, only half your time spent operating. And you're only really earning when you're operating.
Absolutely.
So that treatment is not as cost-effective as some other treatments, which are simpler, lower revision rate. But it's difficult to give up things, isn't it?
Well, it is. But the other thing that you know, potentially can do as well, looking at it, is, I mean, ultimately, this all comes down to what your objective is, and you know what you're trying to get out of your business. So you also almost have to take a step back from all of that and say, what am I trying to achieve here? I'm trying to achieve a certain level of income that I need in order to maintain my lifestyle.
Yeah.
And what is that? And then what are the components of that? And sometimes by doing that, you might be able to break that down and go, actually, I can achieve that by doing this number of operations a year that I really like doing.
Yeah.
And then you suddenly realize and go, but I'm doing a lot more than that. And so that may then help you to really focus down and either look at maybe increasing price.
Yeah.
So maybe you're going to get fewer in, but you're going to be more profitable.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so that's another angle, another way of looking at it. The other thing is looking at, you know, am I trying to build something that I can sell?
Yeah.
I think as a plastic surgeon, you know, with a certain specialty doing procedures, I think it's very hard to sell that. I don't know whether you can or not, really. You will have a database there, probably, but if that's all you're doing, I think that's more difficult than maybe a medical aesthetic clinic where you've got people that are coming in every year and are tied into treatment programs to try and help them hold back time.
Yeah. The problem is with both of those businesses, though, if it is, you know, a lot of clinical practices, it's the person. They're not buying into the clinic so much. They're buying into the person.
Yes.
If that person leaves, you know, is there a business?
Well, what you have to do, I think, and, you know, I know a very well-known dermatologist that's going through this process at the moment who, you know, is sort of challenged with this and looking, saying, okay, fine, I've got to a certain age now, I've got built this, you know, spent a lot of time building this profile, this, you know, this business model, but it does really revolve around me. And so you need someone who's going to buy into that business and work with you for 3 years or so while you phase yourself out and bring that new person in and build their profile. And that's really probably the only practical way that you can do it if you're looking at an exit strategy. Because you're right, if you suddenly say, I'm going to stop tomorrow and get someone in to buy it, I think that's difficult.
Yeah. I think the other thing is assessing your profitability. So we've talked to people who are selling their businesses and they'd say, oh, you know, I've got a clinic, we turn over X amount, my profit is X amount.
Yeah.
Okay. And normally the clinic is worth a multiple of your profit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so your company would be willing to pay, you know, 3-4 up to 7 times profit, whatever the figure is.
Yes.
Yeah, it varies from industry to industry. But what a lot of people do is they don't include what they pay themselves in the profit.
Ah, right. Well, that doesn't work.
So if you're making let's say £100,000 profit, but you're paying yourself £60,000, your profit is only £40,000. It's the money that is retained in the business.
Yes, absolutely, it is, and that's really what any investor will look at. They'll be looking at balance sheet, and they'll be looking at what that retained profit is year on year, because otherwise, everything else is just, you know, is an expense in going out of the business. And if that is a market rate for that individual who's the key person to that business, say a doctor who's doing the treatments, you know, and they're paying themselves, I don't know, say £100,000 a year out of the business, that would probably be a market rate for bringing someone in to replace that person.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I mean, hopefully there's a lot of people who own clinics and have successful practices out there. So let's just say you're a nurse practitioner, you're a nurse prescriber, you've got, you know, you're working 4 or 5 days a week, you know, in salons or wherever, or you've got your own base. You have a profitable business there that's doing well. How do you advise someone like that, you know, who is looking to downsize, retire? What do they do?
I think the only way that they can do that is to have someone who they can gradually introduce into the business. over a period of a year or so, who basically wants to buy in and take that business over and those clients over. But you're going to need that hand-holding process for that person to be able to say, you know, to the clients as they come through over that course of a year, probably at least, you know, I trust this person. This person is going to be, you know, taking over this, and, you know, these are the reasons why. Because otherwise, I think just to try and sell it cold and then somebody to go in and pick it up, I think is difficult. So I think you've got to have that hand-holding process. And in fact, that's not uncommon in a lot of businesses anyway.
Yeah.
You know, where somebody will come in and they'll sell the business, but they'll stay on as a director or they'll have an involvement in the business over a course of a period of a year or two and then gradually phase themselves out. So the thing is with all of that, it's how all that money works over that phase through period, I think, is the key.
So if anyone is thinking about that, perhaps they could always ask you for advice, couldn't they, Ron?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the other side is clearly there is potentially a database there, but that you know has some value. But I think it would have a much lower value than it would do if you went through that kind of phased process.
Yeah, I mean, how much would you buy? Let's say I'm retiring. I'm a clinical specialist. I've got a database of 200 active clients.
Yes.
Okay. Potentially, they're going to be spending £1,000-£2,000 a year with you. Maybe £1,000 profit a year. If they all came back, that is potentially £200,000 profit a year. If I said to you, Ron, how much would you pay me for that? Would you pay me £200,000 a year?
Well, I would really need to know the dynamics of that, and really, you know, you'd dig in a lot more. You'd look at it. You'd investigate the business. You'd look at. I wouldn't believe necessarily what somebody told me unless I had a really good investigation into the business. But I wouldn't be probably paying any more than £50,000 for that.
No, so it's interesting, isn't it? And
you'd probably get £100,000 if you did it the other way around.
Yeah. So Addison Lee, okay, is a taxi company in London. That started off with, I think, Mr. Addison and Mr. Lee driving taxis.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Now, why has Addison Lee become so successful and Mr. Addison and Mr. Lee, like Mr. Price, Mr. Waterhouse and Mr. Cooper, don't work in the business anymore, don't they? But it has become a successful business. It's outlasted. The Mayo Clinic was started by in America, was started by a guy who no longer works in it. How do some companies do that?
Well, because they do go through that process of looking at, as with any business, how they replace that entrepreneur who really started it off with quality people, you know, who come through, who take that business ethos and model forward in a consistent way. And I think that's the thing. I think it has to be consistent and maintain whatever edge that person had built through the original, you know, component of getting into that business model. And clearly there are companies as well that do get taken over where it all falls apart because I think there isn't that consistency there. You know, one at the moment actually is going to be really interesting. I was at Boots this week, because I do some work with them looking at, basically, they're all looking at the home use device marketplace. And Alliance, which basically bought Boots out and took it away from the stock market and took it private, who were basically a VC company, have now sold that to an American company, which is part of Walmart. So very, very different philosophy in terms of how they go about their business, which is very much more pile it high, sell it cheap. Versus Boots, I think, is quite different from a Superdrug type of business model in terms of how they come across.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have two cultures there, which would be interesting to see how they, you know, how they go forward. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
And you know, there is no guarantee really from that perspective. And so I think it is getting that right marry up between, if you are selling a business as well, you know, the person that is coming in and having the right philosophy, your sort of philosophy. If they're going to be successful and go forward, it depends on how you view it. You may not care who you sell it to, as long as you get what you want out of it from a monetary perspective. But I know some people as well who, you know, who have a, you know, very kind of strong, close relationship with their customers as well, who want to make sure that the person coming in is the right person for them.
Yes.
And to hand over to the right person. So I think, you know, there are people, especially from a medical perspective, who, you know, have that relationship with their customers and want to do the right thing for them rather than the right thing for themselves and their bank balance.
Yeah,
and that's possibly the difference between a practitioner selling a business and maybe an entrepreneur who's built something and is just trying to maximise the value they can get out of that.
Yeah. So very interesting. So I suppose this does apply to lots of people. I mean, if you're doing well, you're treating your patients well, you've got a great income stream, but have you really got a business?
Well, and that's it. And ultimately, I think, you know, you really need to sit down and think about that and plan, you know, what your exit strategy is going to be. And just, I think the sooner you do that, the better, whatever your age, really, in terms of looking at then, because that helps you then to look at the processes and the steps you need to put in place in order to get to that exit strategy. If you want to extract the maximum value out of all your work and effort that you put in building that business over the years. Otherwise, when you stop, that's it. The business stops and your income stops.
Yeah. So put some away for your retirement, I think.
Well, that's the other thing as well. I mean, the other sensible things, of course, as well are, you know, building those other revenue streams that people do through investing in property or other businesses or pensions, et cetera, et cetera. And all of that is a very wise thing to do anyway.
Do you know what the definition of a rich man and a wealthy man is, Ron, according to Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which is a famous American book?
Oh, Rich, yeah, that's... Kiosk is his name?
Yeah, it's a good book. I mean, it's very simple. I've got my wife reading it at the moment, actually. She's not reading 50 Shades of Grey. I've made her read this. Apparently page 114 is the page to read, apparently, Ron, if you're interested. Yeah,
but, I'll make a note of that.
Essentially, the aim, according to Rich Dad, Poor Dad, is a wealthy man is someone who, or woman, has basically got enough passive income to live on. So you don't need to work. So you've got property or whatever you've got that generates enough income so that you've got the choice to work or not. So you, if you want to take a year off or you get ill or whatever happens, you can live without working. To become rich, you need to exceed that and have more than you need to live. Yeah. But, you know, our aim really should to really try and develop businesses that you don't work in. So a business that you work in is not really considered an asset like that. So a business that if you passed on that generated money or that you owned. So what do you see the point? What you need to do is try and develop enough.
I totally agree with you, yeah. I mean, that's something that I'm trying to do personally as well, is to look at that, is to build business models that eventually other people can run, but you're just going to extract money out of. And so... you know, it's replacing your skill set and your kind of, you know, technical aspects of what you do with other people who can do that for you. And it's not an easy thing to do, especially in, I think, in your position in the medical marketplace, you know, with where you've invested so much time in your skill set.
Yeah.
And you built your business around that. And then it's, you know, how do you then, you know, capitalise on that and replace it?
Yeah, because for most clinicians, there's a path, isn't it? You start off, you're enthusiastic, you're worried, you do treatments, you don't sleep, you worry, yeah? And then you get a bit better at them, then you start going through probably a slightly cocky phase where you think you can do no wrong. And then you start getting a few problems and then you become a bit wiser and you become a bit more selective because you've seen the complications. So
that's an incredibly honest appraisal, really, of, you know, you very rarely hear that from people, because a lot of people, and certainly I think, you know as well, you meet some people that, you know, kind of come across as the expert and nothing ever has gone wrong.
It's the Americans are the worst for that. So if I get asked to do a talk, it's quite often on complications of surgery. Now, you won't get very rare to get many American guys to talk about complications, you know, because they don't want to get. But, you know, I see patients who've been treated by people who apparently do not get any complications. So it's very interesting. But the I suppose the point is that whatever stage of that cycle you are at now, whether you're at the, you know, the worried stage, the cocky stage, or the, you know, the slightly more mature stage, you probably aren't going to be wanting to work quite at the pace that perhaps you have been forever. So you need to just think about succession planning.
Absolutely. And as you say, either that is just extracting enough money out of the business so you can, you've got those other pots of, if you like, businesses or pensions or whatever that are going to provide the residual income that you need, you know, which is one strategy, and you kind of go, well, if I don't trust anyone who's going to be able to do what I do, it's to sell my business onto them, if you see what I mean. You know, or you look, which I would do, and as well, you know, you look at how you can structure your business so you can extract value out of that at some point when you need to in the future.
Yeah. So you can either keep the money in the business to build it and invest and grow the business. So you can either keep the money in to grow, because you need money to grow, or you can extract as much as you can.
Precisely, and put it into other vehicles that are eventually going to replace that income that will be lost when you close your business down.
Yeah, so really it's... You could do a bit of both, I suppose.
A bit of both is probably the best.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Ron, that's great. Just remind me when Body is again.
It's the 3rd and 4th of November. It's at the Royal Society of Medicine in London, and it's bodyconference.co.uk. There's not a lot on there at the moment, but there will be over the kind of coming months for people if they're interested to look at the agenda as it builds.
Well, brilliant. Well, Ron, really appreciate you taking the time to join me today.
No, my pleasure. It's been fun. I know we've talked about it quite a lot today, but it's been, I think, very interesting.
Great, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your Saturday afternoon.
You too. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, Ron.